Today on My First Concert.
The first time Prince ever, I think David Z was the first guy who really did want to, you know, produce a thing for Prince, which was Kiss. And that was right across the hall here. He did it right in that room across the hall. And, Prince handed me, he loved what I was doing, obviously, and he handed me a cassette that was kind of in, you couldn't really tell what it was. It was, it had his guitar part and his vocals and this garbled keyboard part that you couldn't tell what really what was happening, for real. And so I took the song and I made it into a song and hired, I think I got Paul, Little Brother, on it. Mm-hmm. I got Jimmy Berenger on it. And I got some other people to play on this thing. And then I did a mix of it because it already had his vocals and his guitar parts on it. So, and he came in and poked his head in and freaked out. He thought that was the best thing in the world. And I'll never forget one of the interns that was working with Tom. When we first heard that cassette, he goes, everybody said, oh, that's a smash hit. That's a smash hit. And I'm going, really?
Ricky Peterson is an accomplished Minnesota musician. That's almost an understatement. But on this show, we have highlighted Minnesota music, and Ricky has to be among the top. He's played with a Hall of Fame list of musicians right now with Stevie Nicks. He's played with Fleetwood Mac, George Benson, James Taylor, and so many more. And our visit with Ricky is brought to you from Aquarius Home Services, and we appreciate Jeff and the staff out there at AquariusHomeServices.com and by StarBank.net, our bank right here at Talk North. Along with the pride of Basel, Switzerland, our producer, Davide Rosso, in his real life, is actually a music engineer. And so happy to have him as a part of this program. This is Dave Lee welcoming you back to My First Concert. And Ricky, appreciate your time today because I know it's valuable and I know you have an incredible schedule. But first things first, What was the first concert you ever saw?
Now, there are three of them that I remember when I was a kid. Hi, by the way. How you doing, David? Nice
awesome.
To see you, man. Yeah. Both of you guys. It's nice to see you. I've got to remember that I think the first concert I saw was Three Dog Night. Guess Who? And I remember going to see, after that, I went to see, doggone it, what's it? I'll think of it in a second. You'll have to cut this out but it would have been Three Dog Night. So let's go. Let's just start with that.
And I just saw Bachman Turner Overdrive out at Mystic
a few months ago, man.
And Randy Bachman, I couldn't believe how good they were.
I'll bet they were. Well, they had a bunch of hits, man.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
And his son was playing with him, so which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah. Those guys are all, guess who? I mean, Randy Bachman was part of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. I wasn't aware he wrote quite a few of those songs.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of talent there. And they were recorded here in your studios years ago, too, I understand.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
It's the studios.
Well, they got their name.
Man, yeah,
here,
yeah,
in the studio. Yes.
Well, guess who? What? Or the Bachman Turner Overdrive? Which one?
Yeah, guess who? Yeah,
the guess who?
We learned that. When did we learn that? When we talked to Steve.
Steve, yeah.
That's funny.
They came down from Winnipeg to record. Anyway, the Three Dog Night Show. What do you remember about it?
I just remember that I saw this organ guy who had. He was an organ player who had a beautiful B3, but he had this brand new Leslie that I saw. That was a great big 900, they called it. It was a big gray black box that was so loud and so out of line, man. It spun so fast. It was like being nerve wracked by this Leslie from this guy because it was so loud, man. You know how loud those concerts were back in the day. And it was overwhelming. And the drummer was unbelievable. Can't remember his name. He's unbelievable, man. I remember that. And it was just, and the guy singing, I loved him. You know, we emulated those guys growing up.
So. Oh, yeah. They had a lot of talent in that band.
Oh, my God.
They all
three.
Could sing,
yeah, those guys were so good, man.
Were you playing at that time? I mean,
I was. I was in a band, you know, probably before high school, you know. So this was a long time ago, man. This is, probably early 70s for sure.
You know, before that first concert, what was the first instrument you ever owned?
Well, I owned. Wow. A Fender Rhodes was the first one I ever owned, and I was in a band in high school called Rocking Horse. My mother owned most of the instruments that I played. So, for real, because I never made enough money to buy any instruments back in the day. So, she had a lot of it. And I remember the first instrument that she bought that I kind of took over. We had a house full of instruments, pretty much. We had keyboards, every, you know, grand piano. Very, very lucky. Blessed people to have instruments. They had a C3 downstairs and an M3, which is the Hammond organ. Mm-hmm. And she bought me a Mini Moog when they first came out. And that was 1970, Jesus, had to be 71 or 2. And I remember the serial number was 2000.
Wow.
So it was one of the first ones in Minnesota. And I'll never forget that. And so I, of course, I remember telling her about how great the sound is. You can make it sound like a piano, Mom. You can make it sound like a, you know, do all sorts of different things with it. Of course, I was downstairs messing with it for my whole life, you know, when we first had it. So I was down there messing with that, making sounds through these Shure speakers that she had down there, just loud and wrong, making siren sounds and, you know. Yeah. Having a ball, man, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't this like the modern?
That's it.
Modern.
You're looking at it. That's it. But I modernized it by midifying it so you could play through a MIDI, you know, when the 80s came around. But I own two of them. One of them got stolen. That one, the particular one, the one that Mom bought, got stolen from when I had it on stage. We were at the Prom Theater opening for Ashford and Simpson.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was a band called, I don't know, I can't remember if it was, I think it might have been Good Vibrations was the name of that band. And that's a whole nother story. That's an era of a different story. So we can talk about that later.
If you want. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So anyways, that was the first instrument.
What about the Fender Rhodes? Do you still have it?
The Fender Rhodes, I don't have anymore, but it was bought by the band that I was in called Rocking Horse. And mm-hmm. It was a band... And 74 through 76 or 7 that I was in, rock and roll band, kind of. You remember a band called Straight Up and bands like that? They're all rock bands that were, you know, with the Bombs on stage and the whole thing. So we were trying to do that kind of thing. And we were playing like Emerson, Lake and Palmer music. Yes, a lot of Yes. Boy. And a lot of, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we had a ball with it. So
that's pretty detailed music at that time, wasn't it?
That was pretty difficult stuff. Yeah. You know, so what we were a little bit ahead of our time, I think. You know, I don't think anybody got it because they're going, what are they playing? You know, they wanted to hear Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. You know, that's
prog rock.
Yeah.
This was progressive rock and roll, we're gonna call it. So, you know, Led Zeppelin, but I mean it was all pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I could turn that off.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Not mine.
Anyways. Let's see, where were we? We were
so
talking, kind of, yeah, the Fender Rhodes. First time I heard that instrument, I was very intrigued by the sound of it. And I think I heard it on a Edgar Winter record. And that was way back when I was in early high school.
Yeah.
And it was a song called Autumn, and I'll never forget. It was on one of his records. I believe the record was, They Only Come Out at Night, and it was a big, had Frankenstein and stuff like that.
I remember that record. I saw Edgar and Johnny in concert one time.
Oh, me too. That was the best, man.
Oh, it was great.
That was the best, and that was one of the few concerts that I saw when I was a kid, you know, that. And anyways, we'll get to that. the Rhodes, the band knew I wanted that Rhodes, and it was the band Rocking Horse. And we had a band house in Bloomington that we would go rehearse at. And be knuckleheads at, you know, it was our little man cave.
You can imagine, like a man cave.
I mean, man cave in high school.
Oh boy!
Yeah. Exactly correct. So
you were ahead of your time.
Yes. A little bit. The drinking age was 18 at that time, by the way.
In
Minnesota. So that was, it's a strange thing. But anyways, I walked in one day down the basement, and they had this brand new Fender Rhodes set up downstairs. So the band had bought that for me.
Oh my.
I paid for it, of course, but you know, they took it out of my fee of $36 a gig or whatever we were making. And I was floored. I couldn't even touch it. I was just absolutely mesmerized by it. And of course, when I touched it, it had this belly sound to it, this real belly, beautiful thing. And I just, I was in tears, man. I was like freaked out. So anyways, that was my first real instrument that I owned. So
man, that's a special memory with the instrument.
Oh my gosh, like sure. Yeah.
First love or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good Vibrations. Let's go back to that. I want to hear about that band.
Good Vibes was after high school. Now there's bands before that too. There was I did a lot of stuff with Patty, my sister.
Yeah.
We were in bands together. One was called Emerald. And another one was Class Action. And we had these bands that were very, very, very good bands. And after those bands, I believe, I don't know if Class Action was, I believe Class Action was after Good Vibrations. Good Vibes was kind of the aftermath of Michael's Mystics. Do you remember that band at all, the Mystics?
It had
Rocky Robbins in it. Rocky Robbins, who was an 80s superstar,
mm-hmm.
Great crooner, singer guy. And it was a band with Josh Weaver, who is a great bass player. And I think he was from Vegas. And he came through up to Minneapolis. Why, I don't know. But they put this band together called Good Vibes. And they were together for a couple of years before I joined. And I got in that band because the keyboard player they had was leaving to go play with some big band or something that he really wanted to do. And I just happened to be in there. They knew who I was because I was playing in these other bands. And I fit the bill because I loved R&B music, you know. So, and this was definitely R&B. It had a woman by the name of Candy Anderson, who was a lead singer also, who eventually came into the band Class Action with us too. But that band was one of my favorite learning experiences of my life, man. That was, you know, because we were learning all sorts of stuff with Bobby Lyle music and doing all this pretty difficult stuff, man. It was great.
And you probably didn't even know you were learning along the way.
No, not really, but I sure loved it, you know, when I was doing it. I was like, well, this is what I want to do, you know? That's kind of where I came from, was that R&B rock and roll thing, you know? So,
And you're still doing it. In fact, when we come back, I want to ask you about, you know, David Sanborn, obviously Stevie Nicks, and some other, there's a lot of big names that we toss in there.
I know. You flatter me, man. Sometimes you forget about that stuff, you know?
It ain't bragging if it's the truth, right? Isn't that the deal? Hey, I do want to thank our friends at Star Bank. Speaking of bragging, this is a local company, Minnesota-based company, started years ago, and they've kept their roots in rural Minnesota, and now, of course, right here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But I got to tell you, this still has that charm of a small-town bank where you walk in, pretty good chance they'll get to know you, really good chance you'll know them, and they like that. They like it so much, so when you call them, they'll answer the phone and chat with you. Nobody goes on, none of the press one here, press two here, press three here. You get to talk to somebody. But the key is, obviously, you're saying, well, can I get a loan over there? Or can I work some of the banking magic that I need to do? And they've got all sorts of things going on. If it's a business lending solution at Star Bank, they'll tailor it to assist you with everything from managing, inventory, to paying your vendors, to covering your operating expenses and more. But competitive rates, certainly, in flexible terms. But when it comes to money, man, you want somebody you can trust, somebody you feel good about, that you don't worry about. And if you're thinking of a loan, by the way, turnaround time is great. Their service is outstanding. And it might be a home equity loan. Might be you're thinking about that RV you've thought about for a long time, or the camper, or whatever it is. Personal banking, checking, savings, IRAs, HSAs, all that stuff, safe deposit boxes, they have everything. CDs, which are a hot topic right now. Anyway, digital banking services, so you can do it all on your phone. So there's no problem there, like a lot of us like to do, obviously, because we have busy schedules. But you can get to know them pretty well by going in there or just giving them a call. But I would call Star Bank today or online at starbank.net. Loans are subject to a loan application and approval. Member FDIC, an equal housing lender. They are our bank right here at Talk North. Ricky Peterson's nice enough to join Davide and I here on my first concert today on a hectic schedule. And before I talk about some of the people you play with and have played with, your schedule is still, it seems to me, as busy as ever.
Well, you know what? It's very. I've been very, very fortunate to be able to be still working in the field. You know, so yes, it's been busy. When you come home, you think you're going to be a little, you know, have time off the road, and I've kind of been a road dog for the last 40 years. You know, so when you go on the road, you have a little bit more time to yourself, and you get to do things that you want to do. As you're strolling, you're walking, you're going to the gym, you're doing things like that that you don't really get to do when you come home. Because when I come home, I hit the ground running. You know, I'm whoa, okay. Well, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing this, we're doing this. You know, so that's kind of where I'm at right now. Since I've been home, I did go and take a little vacation though. I made sure that I brought my wife. And we went to visit our friends who we hadn't seen in Hawaii this past. I'm very fortunate to be able to do that too. But I set it up last year so I could afford
yes.
it.
Yes.
But anyways, we had a little time off there. But, you know, like I said, when I come home, I hit the ground running. We're doing sessions all the time. And we're in the studio that I usually use. And I have a studio at home that I get to do. And people send me songs. And it's still file sharing still now. Because of the pandemic, you know, yeah. So, which is no longer, well, of course, we'd rather be in the studio playing live, you know, music.
Sure, together.
But yeah, that's the best way to do it, of course, as you can imagine. Anyways, I've been doing these things that, like I said, if it's a file sharing thing where they send me a song and I'll play organ or piano or whatever on top of it, And if I get a chance to do a little mixing, I do some of that too. So that's yeah. fun for me, you know. And just getting my ears in tune with music again, you know. So,
yeah. A lot of years with the headphones on too, I imagine.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah. So a little deaf.
Yeah. I know that feeling.
I know you do, man. You did it for years too, boy.
Let me ask you about a couple of things. But The Most Beautiful Girl in the World and your association with Prince, that was you had a lot to do with that. With a lot of music, particularly that song. Can I ask you the story behind that?
Sure, man. You know what? When I was Princeton, I mean, let's go back to the Prince story where I first met him in 79. And I would go over to his house with a friend of mine, Jimmy Bowman. I don't know if you remember that name. If you've, anyways, he's a dear friend. One of my father's best friend's son, James Bowman, Jimmy Bowman, was a wonderful musician out of Chicago, I believe. And he came to Minnesota, and they became friends. And Jimmy was my friend, around the same age and stuff. But Jimmy was friends with the people that were associated with Prince. So we would go to his house, to this place where Pepe Willie is the guy's name, and I think he lived in Edina. And he would host Prince's band when Prince was in the studio doing that first record For You, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. He was trying to put a band together, and he had other people already lined up, but he didn't have a keyboard player. So I would go over there and I would jam with him. And of course, at that time, he was putting together The Revolution. And they both sat me upstairs, he and Owen Husney, nice gentleman who was the manager at the time. He took me up to the living room and asked me, well, we want to ask you if you want to join the band. And I was kind of startled with it, you know, because I had other plans in my head of the things that were going on in my life at that time. And I eventually turned him down. So, and I think he respected that of me to make that decision because he knew he was going to be a big star. And what it entailed to be in that band was a lot of shirt tailing on him, you know, making sure that you were doing exactly what he said and, you know, doing dances and things that were not in my bag,
yeah.
to tell you
yeah.
the truth, yeah. you know. So that was my reason for not doing it is because I was doing other music in my brain already. I was doing my own stuff.
And he wasn't the Prince that we all came to know yet at that time.
Not at that time.
But how long did it take you to make that decision?
About 1984 and 85, I re-upped with him. And he was startled to see me at one of his concerts, which was huge. I actually went, Cubby Colby, I don't know if you know who yep. Rob Colby is, was his front of house engineer for many, many years in the beginning. And I would go visit him because he was a friend of mine too. And they were at the old Metropolitan Sports Arena, mm-hmm. the Met Center.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing Prince behind stage. He said, wow, what are you doing here, man? It's great to see you. La-da-da. You know, he was actually human.
Talkative.
But yeah, he was. But he was very, very, very gracious to me and respectful. And it was really nice to know him because I know you know, the horror stories from some of the people that I know, that how he treated his band members or the people around him in that kind of situation, because he was very much a stickler on what was going on. Anyways, it all became a thing where, he built Paisley Park, okay? And right away, I knew the people that were kind of involved with that. And so I went out there, and he was kind of happy to see me out there and said, hey, you know, eventually towards the 90s and 88, 89, he actually hired me to be a staff producer at Paisley Park Records when he, you know, he was already a huge star and doing music for other people and that kind of thing.
But he never forgot you.
Never forgot me, man. He was happy that I was there. The one really, really cool thing I'll never forget him saying to me, he was mentioning some other big stars at the time and writers and stuff like that. And he said, but these people ain't got no Ricky P.
Wow.
And I was like gassed, you know, and this is when he, you know, changed his name to Taff Cap, which was the form of the prince that was formerly known as, you know, whatever. And in that interim, I went, he handed me a couple of things, kind of like threw me a bone.
Yeah.
You know, he'd throw me a couple of cassettes of something he was working on. Mavis Staples, a couple of different people that he was writing songs for, and he wanted me to fix them up because they weren't quite ready.
Oh, how flattering.
Yeah. So I was happy to do that. And at that time, my friend Tom Tucker was doing the engineering and running the studios at that time. And he and I had history before that. So we were best friends and we hung together all the time. So we were working together on all the stuff and we had the best time. We owned that place for many years, man. And it was unbelievable. We had all the studios running. David Z was a part of it, who was David Rifkin. And we all worked together. So we were going from studio to studio doing stuff either for Prince or for the Fine Young Cannibals or for somebody, all these people called Colin Hay. We did a bunch of stuff for them.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a lot of really fun stuff. So the first time Prince ever, I think David Z was the first guy who really did want to, you know, produce the thing for Prince, which was Kiss. And that was right across the hall here. He did it right in that room across the hall. And, Prince handed me, he loved what I was doing, obviously. And he handed me a cassette that was kind of you couldn't really tell what it was. He had his guitar part and his vocals and this garbled keyboard part that you couldn't tell really what was happening for real. And so I took the song and I made it into a song and hired, I think I got Paul, little brother, on it. I got Jimmy Berenger on it. And I got some other people to play on this thing. And then I did a mix of it because it already had his vocals and his guitar parts on it. And he came in and poked his head in and freaked out. He thought that was the best thing in the world. And I'll never forget one of the interns that was working with Tom. When we first heard that cassette, he goes, everybody said, oh, that's a smash hit. That's a smash hit. And I'm going, really?
Was that fluff?
I don't think it was fluff. It was the other guy, the big Brian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think Brian, I can't remember his last name, but he was a lovely cat too. Anyways, that was the first thing that I did for Prince. And after we did that, and this is the first thing that he did off the Warner Brothers label. This is when he was feuding with Warner Brothers at that time. So anyways,
that was a
big deal. And it was a huge hit. And they did it with a different Bellmark, I think was the name of the record company. It was a strange one-off thing that we did. And we did 1,000 versions of it. You know, we did a smooth jazz version. And it's a bunch of them. Anyways, The Most Beautiful Girl turned out to be one of his biggest hits in the 90s. And then after that, I did a bunch of stuff with him. So I did the Gold record, the Gold Experience. We did Crystal Ball. I just played and arranged some stuff for him on those. So it just kind of went on from there.
And he listened to you.
He did, man.
Yeah.
That
was a rarity.
I was one of his guys, man, you know, that he could rely on.
So, yeah. Trusted you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I was flattered. to say the least.
So how
what a talented cat, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if we all realize what a guitar player he was. You did, but once once you got to see him on stage and start riffing, you're kind of shaking
well,
your
freaky.
Head.
It's freaky. Yeah. He was a touched man. Yeah. There's no doubt.
But how did the Stevie Nicks thing happen?
Oh, well, that's another story.
Because you're going to be touring with her again this
I am. I'm doing the Stevie Nicks and the Fleetwood Mac thing all happened within the last 17 years. I started with them after the fact that I played with John Mayer.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I did the John Mayer tour in 2006 and that record in 2005, the Continuum record I played on. And, of course, they asked me to go on tour with them, so I said, sure. So I figured I'd do that for that year. You know, and that was it. That was good. You know, I had a great time. Mm-hmm. And after that, I went to the one of the percussion players, that a dear friend of ours, Lenny Castro, who would come in and do, you know, like the live dates on television stuff with John. And I asked him, I said, what are you doing, man? Are you going to go play with somebody? Because he was a Toto man. He played with Toto forever. Right. And Toto was not doing anything at that time. So he goes, yeah, I'm going to go play with Stevie Nicks. And I went, Stevie Nicks, really? Yeah, he's kind of a rock and roll guy, you know. He's a good rock and roll player. He plays all the way around everything. He can do everything, you know, the Lenny Castro guy, who's a good friend. And he said, I said out of the blue, I just said, well, they need a keyboard player. And he went, I think they do. Are you interested? And I said, why not? Why not? I'd love to do something. And I went and I auditioned for her and, you know, well, with a bunch of other musicians that were auditioning for the keyboard chair. And they had a guy by the name of Brett Tuggle, who is a wonderful musician who was leaving to go play with Lindsey Buckingham. Because they were in feuding. You know, Stevie and Lindsey were not getting along. So he was friends with Lindsey. So he was leaving Stevie. So that's why they were hiring another keyboard player who played organ and guitar for, you know, to let you know, which I don't play. But I can get the sound on a keyboard. Anyways, I was chosen to do the gig. So that was flattering also. So we had, ever since then, Waddy Wachtel, who is the musical director of that, who's been around from New York, from Brooklyn, has been around music forever, who played with, everybody, man. I mean, he's been on everybody's records from the 80s and 90s, so, and 70s for that matter. But anyways, that's how I got the Stevie Nicks gig, and it's been history since then. But then, of course, I'd still do Sanborn, too. So if you
For many years,
yeah,
right?
For 35 years, I was a director, musical director. So, well, 20 of those 35 anyway.
What was it like when you had said, I got an audition in front of Stevie Nicks? Is it nerve-wracking or not really? I mean, you know what you're doing.
Well, I did. And I was confident enough to go in because I knew the song already. Because I had, you know, I'd sat with it and pretty much knew I'd probably played it in different bands. You know, I was auditioned with Stop Dragging My Heart Around, which is a Tom Petty song.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And there was their duet, and that's what I got up, and I played the first four notes, and Waddy went, okay, that's enough. For real. I swear to God, that was the truth. And it was like, really? And
because probably nobody else knew the song.
Well, they didn't. Nobody had the confidence to go up and just blast it. You know, it was like, I think that was part of the deal. The guy went up and just went, you know, did the whole thing, and they were like, oh, yeah, okay, that's fine. Thank you, you know. So... I know that sounds a little, you know, I don't know if that sounds egocentric.
No,
but,
it's just the way it was. You know,
That was it. And since then, of course, like I said, I've been doing other things in between because she didn't work constantly.
Right.
Ever. It's been spotty. But
she's been loyal and you've been loyal with
absolutely.
Her. You're pretty good
Why
friends.
Not, man? I love her. She's beautiful. She's good friends with my wife. You know, they became good friends. I believe that the COVID thing kind of changed a lot of that action, just because she was so deathly afraid of it. You know, she had some issues that were underlying issues that she had with her lungs, I think. And it scared the heck out of her.
Which affects her singing.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's her main instrument.
Well, that whole thing, you know, if somebody came down with COVID, they'd shut the whole thing down. People, you know, they shut it down. Yeah. Boom, it's done.
All of a sudden you canceled the concerts.
Oh, yeah. So we had to cancel a few of them.
I bet. So when COVID, but now I'm digressing.
That's all right.
But when COVID hit, as a musician, what did you do?
What did I do? I sat on my thumbs pretty much, man. I mean, like everybody else, we did nothing. But luckily enough, Paul and I had the wherewithal to start just doing music for people that were, we did file sharing, you know, that's where all that started, man, because we were used to being in the studio playing live all
sure,
the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's when file sharing really started. I mean, everybody did take time off. They took, there was 6-7 months that nothing happened. Nothing.
Right.
Nobody was doing anything. Everybody was scared to death, of course, of dying because they're
well, bingo.
You know, yeah. People were dying everywhere. It's like, what? So everybody was very leery of doing anything, going out, you know. Yeah. I remember going out to when food first started. Remember that? You know, yeah. And you'd have to sit in your car and wait. And I was, anyways. But talk about digressing.
Yeah, but for musicians, it was wild. And of course, I mean, then there was some federal effort to make sure that somehow we got the arts and music back going a little bit. It was a really bizarre time. But especially if you're a musician, man, that was that. So in a way, in a strange way, it was beneficial as far as learning the file sharing and doing all of
absolutely.
Those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people were tired of not doing anything. So what else are you going to do? You're going to sit in your studio down in the basement and write songs. And that's what we did. We wrote songs. We wrote – Paul came up with the – Davide came up with the podcast.
The Funk Friday.
The Funk Friday deal.
Yeah, great podcast. Yeah.
And that was really fun. So we really worked on that. You know, of course, we played – Paul and I did most of the first ones and we just brought music. We'd come down here because this is our studio, and we would do it down here. And it was just fun. Mm-hmm. We'd video each other and just have a ball doing it. So that was something to look forward to every week.
Right.
So, but other than that, it was a little strange. But I had been playing with Fleetwood Mac prior to that, and so I was employed by Fleetwood Mac. So I was able to get unemployment during COVID, during the time off that we had. So that was very nice because I'd never done that before in my life. You know, I've always been my own guy. I had my own company and stuff, so I could never, you know, get unemployment for any of that when you're not working.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily enough, I've been working. So
well, then, and of course, you had relationships with Mick Fleetwood,
yes,
and the whole band, and then of course, his name popped up news when they had all those fires in Maui. Remember, he had a club out there,
and that was the strangest thing that ever happened, man.
But Christine McVie, and I mean, man, what a just hanging out with that group.
It was incredible. It was incredible, and overwhelming at times, just because I'm on stage with Christine McVie, who is one of my favorites, and
Stevie
at the same time.
Yeah,
one of the biggest
Mick,
bands
of course.
In the world.
Yeah,
and devoted fans. I mean, I went to some of your concerts there as well, and the fan bases. I mean,
it's incredible.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I'm sorry for Stevie and Lindsay that they couldn't, you know, get it together enough to go do another thing, but then we lost Christine, so that kind of put a fizzle on the whole Diamond thing, you know, which was a sad thing. But
And not unusual to see you're hanging out with each other on the road a lot.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right, exactly.
But there's another guy that Saul's been a favorite of mine, and I had a chance to see him. I've told Davide the story years ago when the Midnight Special was still a thing. And we were out in California.
Oh, yeah.
Me and my two buddies and I were just driving around the country, kind of renegades with, you know, really no responsibility.
Well, we love that.
But so we ended up at the Midnight Special and they were taping it. And the host that night was a guy named George Benson. And we had no clue. We walked in. We had no clue. Somebody said, hey, you want to go see a taping of this show called Midnight Special? Yeah, let's go. We knew about it, but we didn't know where we were going to go because we're walking.
Was that in New York or where was it?
Burbank.
Burbank. So it was L.A.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Out in L.A. So anyway, George Benson. The reason I bring that up is because you and George Benson have a relationship, and I want to ask you about that in just a minute if I can. Ricky Peterson's with us here. My first concert. Great to have you with. Also great to have Jeff Doherty and his staff over at AquariusHomeServices.com with us as well. Now, I've been working with Jeff. I've been using that company for over 2 decades. And I think about right now with spring storm season upon us, if you've ever worried about losing power at your home, and I guess we all have at one point, well, worry no more because Aquarius Home Services has got you covered with their top-notch generator installation services now. And I don't let Minnesota storms leave me in the dark. They're going to make sure your fridge stays cold, your sump or your well pump keeps running, the old sump pump stops running, that's not fun, and your lights stay on. Best of all, they offer free consultation to help you find the perfect solution for your home. It's really valuable. It's really important. And I will tell you that the great thing about Jeff is the reason I know you'll stay with Aquarius Home Services, because they really follow up. We were talking earlier about trust factor. It's a big deal for me. It's your home. It's our homes. We want to make sure who's ever in there fixing things does it the way we want and the way they know that is best. Aquarius really does believe in earning the right to be recommended. I'd find out more. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com. Awesome, awesome people, by the way. Okay, Ricky Peterson back with us on my first concert. Ricky, let's talk about the relationship with George Benson.
George, what a concept that was. Holy buckets. I have to tell you, I was working with a man by the name of Tommy La Puma a lot back in the early 90s and late 80s. And Tommy, this is how I met George. So it's kind of convoluted, but I'll let you know.
For everyone, Tommy La Puma was a huge producer.
Music one of the biggest producers on the planet. Yep. He was good friends with my friend. I have to tell you about Ben Sidran.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Ben Sidran was the starter of all this stuff. And Ben was working with Billy for very many years. So Ben Sidran was working with Billy, and Billy and he got together and heard my kind of music that I was doing, that I was writing, and Ben was very intrigued. He loved it. So Ben hired me to do a bunch of records with him, and funky, kind of before smooth jazz. It was Ben Sidran music, which is kind of talk music and storytelling music, jazz-wise. And talk about cutting your teeth and getting to learn something from a guy who could really play, you know, and Billy, and hanging with Billy, who is my mentor, you know. These guys are both my mentors, you know. So Ben introduced me to Tommy La Puma, who in turn hired me to plan something for Sanborn, for David Sanborn. He introduced me to Sanborn. Sanborn was looking for a keyboard player for his band. And he said, would you be interested in doing this? Yes, of course I'd be interested in doing that. Anyways, it all ended up being because of Ben, Tommy La Puma. Tommy La Puma introduced me to Ben, George Benson. Tommy La Puma got me a record deal, my first record deal that I ever had with Warner Brothers in that 1988, which was flabbergasting to me. So he had come out with Ben Sidran to hear me play music at one of the clubs, and he said, well, I want that guy. So Tommy took me under his wing and introduced me to David Sanborn, introduced me to George Benson, and we ended up producing a record for George called That's Right, and then we did it at Paisley Park, and that's how I met George, and we became fast friends.
Oh, at Paisley? I did not know that.
Yes.
There's actually a video of that session on YouTube.
Yes, there is. Ben Sidran and I did a bunch of stuff at Paisley. We had a record company called Go Jazz out of Tokyo, and I think it was on Blue Thumb was the relative distributor or something like that. Anyways, that's when we started, because we were doing a lot of stuff at Paisley at the time with Ben, and he was doing other people, and we were doing the music for him, and that's how George came along with Tommy, and we ended up doing a lot of stuff with George, and we're still friends today. So I go out and see him, and we go hang, and we have a ball, and he's just incredible, man.
Hi, Davide here, your producer for my first concert. Ricky had so much more to tell us that I decided to cut this podcast in two parts. And because they've already left, I have the honor to give thanks to our sponsors, Starbank.net and Aquarius Home Services. You can download and listen to all of these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download these. Or you can go to our website, talknorth.com. Part 2 of this podcast will be published in 2 weeks, as next week we will have Pamela McNeil back on our show, as she will get inducted into the Minnesota Music Hall of Fame. Until next week, back with Dave Lee on My First Concert.